Welcome to Five Questions, a Critical Mass for the Visual Arts podcast. My name is Joe Colburn, and I'll be interviewing creatives with connections to St. Louis, but I won't just be asking the usual questions, sort of by design. These short episodes that we're creating will be released as we record them, and we will try to dig a little bit deeper and get at the previously undiscovered, the weird, and perhaps the uncanny. We'll see how that goes. Remains to be seen. Our first interviewee is David Johnson, who recently had a show at Beverly called Wig Heavier Than a Boot, which was a collaboration with poet Philip Matthews. Wig Heavier Than a Boot was also recently on Lynn Scratch's States Project, highlighting five Missouri-based photographers. David himself is a St. Louis-based artist who received his MFA from WashU in 2007. He won the Great Rivers Visual Art Award from the Gateway Foundation, which culminated in his 2012 show entitled Institutional Etiquette and Strange Overtones, which was at the Contemporary Art Museum in St. Louis. His photographs have been exhibited locally and internationally, including the Contemporary Art Museum, Mildred Lane Kemper Museum, Fort Wayne Museum of Art, and National Building Museum in Washington, D.C., as well as Candela Books and Gallery in Richmond, Virginia, La Esquina in Kansas City, Missouri, New Space Center for Photography in Portland, and internationally in both Denmark and Germany. His work can be found in the collection of the Museum of Contemporary Photography in Chicago, and currently Johnson is a lecturer at St. Louis University. David is also a Creative Stimulus Award winner himself. He's recently curated an exhibition at the Millstone Gallery called Fractured Tranquility, featuring Brett Williams, William Morris, and Megan Grubb. So welcome, Dave.
Good to be here.
Yeah. So I'm going to ask you these questions. We're going to see where it goes, and feel free to grab the controls if at any point we go into a tailspin or anything like that. All right. So the first question, the hard question is, why do you do this to yourself?
God, wow. Why do I do this to myself? I think art was the only thing that ended up making real sense. I mean, I don't know if a whole lot of people in St. Louis actually know, but I almost went to school to be a pastor. And actually in high school, I was either going to be a pastor or I was going to do sports medicine. Biology never made sense. And I think I started asking questions differently than what a pastor would have asked. And photography kind of presented itself, and then I realized that I was interested in asking questions to ask deeper questions. I grew up with a lot of learning disabilities, and so school was never easy, and at a very young age I realized that observing the world was the way that I learned from the world. Like, I remember this time in elementary school where I was like, we walked in and it was like a pop quiz on taking the cursive alphabet, and you had to do the alphabet in cursive, and the teacher had taken down, like, above the chalkboard there was like that green with white lettering cursive alphabet that, like, we all relied on, and that was off the chalkboard. And like, I'm sitting there and she's like, well, you have to, like, do the alphabet in cursive before you can go play. And I was like, I can't do this. And then all of a sudden I realized, like, there is this pasty yellow cinder block wall with an olive green file cabinet and a bowl full of Jolly Ranchers. And that was like a still life that I remembered. And once I looked at that and fixated on that, I could recall information. So a lot of my, like, understanding how to learn through these learning disabilities were very much tied to being present in a moment, observing a kind of small moment, and then reciting the information. So, like, now that, like, as an adult, or even as an educator, I can remember a conversation by remembering the room and remembering, like, the item that I'm fixated on, and then, like, all this information floods back. And that's very much what photography, which is, like, my main medium, does for me. But I've also realized that, like, there are symbols within the world that kind of key back into other practices that I've used within my studio. So very much tied to, like, the single image in real life to recall information was the way that I always kind of learn things. But then it turned into, like, how do you ask a question that leads to a better question? Which, like, at first I think, you know, when I was in undergrad, it was like, just how do I do this? And then in graduate school, it's like, how do I do this better? Or how do I do this well? But how do I do this with saying something? And then, like, now as an adult and somewhat of an artist who's had success in multiple different ways, it's like, how do I do this even more to bridge better questions for a larger audience? So it's like this evolving process of, like, it started off with finding myself, and then finding myself with a media, and then finding myself with an audience, and then trying to expand that audience and trying to ask different questions that, you know, it always goes back to like who, like at the core of like what like what's the tick, what's the one object in a room that really excites me that's going to call up everything else that's around me or like within me in a way.
That's such a good answer. People have a hard time talking that. Okay, so then which of your works do you think is most likely to end up in a suburban basement?
It's already there.
Is it really?
Yeah.
No.
I mean, like, I mean, there are like two ways I think about like the question of like, you know, that's like the big fear question of like, where are things going to end up? And I know that somewhere in like West County of St. Louis, my BFA project, which is like this really long panoramic image of like three women, is so bad. It's like three women and they all appear topless. They're not topless, but like two are flicking the camera off and then like one sticking her tongue out. And like a buddy of mine like bought it and I ended up buying a bike with the money that he bought it from, like custom made frame that was like 9 feet long. It was like this huge, like it actually got the secretary of the school that I was at in undergrad came out, and when I hung the piece for my final BFA show, she's like, "This is disgusting. How could you have this in the show?" And actually mirrored, it was like there's the main gallery and then the gallery like split off into like multiple hallways within the school. So I got put, like the wall that I got curated to was like there's pieces in the show and in this hallway, and this piece was a little bit late, so it didn't get into the main show, but it was mirrored with young children paintings on the playground. So it's like young kids playing like jump rope, like oil paints, with like these three women with a black backdrop like flicking off the camera and like sticking their tongues out. And it was like the whole project was like trying to like create these relationships because like social media and Facebook had just become into this now, and you know I was interested in the way that we were doing this. But I know that that piece is already in somebody's basement in suburbia. And like actually somebody called me and like, "Do you want this? Like, do you want this back?" Like, I was like, you bought it. I don't necessarily like feel comfortable with you just giving it back to me. Like, what if we trade? Why don't you and your new wife go to my web?" And the thing is like, he was a single dude. He bought this piece and it was like in his apartment. And then he got married and his wife was like, "No, that's not in the house." I was like, "Well, why don't you your new wife like pick something off my website?" And that was like the suggestion. I hadn't heard anything back, so I don't know where the piece is, but it's still there. But like the other question is like, you know, as a young artist and then an artist that like went to school and then an artist that's, you know, still practicing, I've given my mother lots of artwork, like, and my father lots of artwork. And they just moved. And so there's this like, it's really great because I love going to their house because like every room has like something that's in there. And like my mom, who's a painter, would always complain that her mother would hang something over the fireplace and it would be like, you know, the paint by numbers that she did when she was 10. But my mother had been an artist for like 20 years and she still had the paint by numbers over the fireplace, but she didn't have like the brand new, like really beautiful, like swan painting that she had made. Yeah. And I'm like, "Oh, like that's, I feel you." And then like I go back into their new house that they just moved into, and like there's my room that I stay in, and it's every single photograph that I gave them from like high school to undergrad to like first year of grad school. I'm like, I'm literally in the middle of my old work. Like I wake up and I have to critique myself and be like, "Why did you make that decision?" Like every day I'm like looking at the work that I had made. It's like I go home for Christmas or for the holidays, it's just like, "Here's your work.
Deal with it.
Like, oh, it's, I mean, I feel like there's some sort of like Cronenberg or Lynchian film based on like artists having to be surrounded by their own earlier past works.
Oh yeah. And like every morning when you wake up, the walls are a little closer.
Yeah. And it's a little bit more closer. At least they didn't keep, there's one piece in their old house. It was like a self-portrait in my first figure drawing class where I had to do like, a self-portrait but base it off like another artist, and it was like I was really into Picasso at the time, and so I did this, and I'd wake up every morning and there's this really horrible self-portrait a la Picasso that was like over my bed, and every morning I'd wake up and see that. Thank God it's not up anymore. It's now I just have to deal with the photographs that my parents have. But like those are the things of like, how do you hang on? But like they're all important, like all those are all steps to how I think and look now. So, I mean, it works, but it's also like, it's very confined into one space that I sleep in. And my parents also moved in a place where like they have roosters. So like I wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning because there's roosters, and then I'm seeing like shadows of past photo work. I don't know. I mean, it's like, it's not a basement in suburbia, but it's also a place that I have to revisit continually.
Right.
But you know, they support it and they love it. So, you know, I love my parents for that, for continuing to hang on to those pieces.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So what do you think needs to happen here in St. Louis?
Oh man, so much. I think I've been in St. Louis for almost 12 years now, and I've seen this amazing change from St. Louis kind of comparing itself to other cities to now it's not comparing itself and it's really proud of itself. And I think that's great. But we're also seeing all these institutions close. We're seeing a lot of artist-run spaces close. But we're also in, like, I think, you know, I read some statistic where we're, like, the idea that we're, like, one of the most philanthropic cities per capita in the nation. And we continually go in this, like, five-year wave of really great art programming, really great artists-run spaces, and they disappear. Because it's financial. You know, an artist has an idea, they have a space, they have an opportunity, they become known, they have this thing, but then they realize it's a financial obligation that they can't sustain. And in that, I think there's a way that we can marry these conversations of, I mean, there's conversations that are happening on Cherokee Street and with the artists that are on Cherokee Street. And there's conversations I've heard with institutional board members in Central West End, and everyone's having the same conversation, but they're at different tables. Mm-hmm. And I think the table needs to get much bigger and with no chairs, so people become a little bit more uncomfortable. But I also think there's a hunger for it in a certain population within St. Louis that really want to support local artists. They just don't know how. Mm-hmm. And they're really, you know, the same people that love farmers markets, but may go and buy artwork at IKEA. You know, so I think it's figuring out how to marriage those two, because there is no real vibrant commercial gallery scene. And even now with, what, 4, 5, 6 galleries closing in the last year, like, yeah, there's not an artist run space gallery. So like, I think we need to figure out new funding models to make sure that artist run spaces exist longer. And that could be owning property to where we're not having to face rent. And somebody, you know, donating space on a long-term lease. It could be younger collectors looking. And I think these are all conversations I'm having with people to figure out, like, exactly how this works. Because I think, and everybody's having these conversations, but just making sure that that table is a lot larger, right, to where we're supporting all the artists in town and not just a select few, and having more commercial galleries that support more local artists, because that's going to help our local artists go to larger, more prominent galleries in other places. When you have a majority of collectors going to Chicago and New York to collect artwork, right, at least from the perspective that I've seen and heard, I think there's a marriage between like getting a new collector base and marrying them to local artists. And I think with the Cortex that's happening and that kind of entrepreneurial spirit that's happening in St. Louis, it's happening. And I think we're going to see those movements happen a lot quicker really soon. Yeah. So I think that's there. I think it's happening, but I think it could happen a little bit quicker to make sure that we have more spaces that can provide. Because, you know, as soon as you start supporting local artists, the better they're going to make, you know, they're going to be able to make work easier. They're not going to have 8 jobs and not have to like part-time everything together. And then they can also focus on their careers and maybe expanding their careers. Yeah. And if they have collectors, they can go to galleries and other places that want to sell artwork to collectors.
Right.
And other places.
They don't have to work at Whole Foods or something like that.
Exactly.
Okay, so what do you wish someone would ask you about your work? So what do you want to ask yourself about your work, in essence?
I'm like always in my head about my work. I try to ask everything that I can, but I think I'm really interested in understanding, in a very clear and defined way, how people are responding to the work. Almost like I've always envisioned this idea of like, you know, there's I think musicians are amazing. I love going to live music shows because musicians have to respond to their audience immediately. Mm. There is no mirror. There is no wall. You don't hang something on the wall. They're right there. You know if somebody's enjoying your song or not as a musician. Yeah. I think in the art world, you know, there's the opening and the closing reception, if there's a closing reception. So then, like, you stand in the corner and, like, you may look at somebody, but generally you just want to talk to your friend or, like, you want to go outside and just drink a beer and not have to worry about people. But, like, I would love to see, like, some sort of way where, like, artists have that kind of, like, two-way mirror or, like, where they're, like, they can see into the gallery but no one can see them, to where they can see people, like, respond in their artwork in, like, a really natural setting, where, like, you know, a lot of people are amazingly generous in the way that they respond to artwork from their friends. And I think most recently with the Beverly show, it was really interesting because a lot of times within my own art practice, I'll talk to people about what I'm working on and I somehow get into this kick of doing really long-term projects. And it takes years to finish a project. And so people know about it. I have studio visits. But as Phil and I were working, it was just he and I kind of having this conversation. So I forgot that I had not, part of my studio practice was always kind of bringing people in to talk about things. We had not done that. It's just been Phil and I.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we had the opening and I read a lot of people as really surprised in the work, partly because I hadn't shared it with them, but partly because I think a lot of people knew me for, or knew my work from the contemporary, where it was this, interior architecture, really minimalistic, almost abstract, and here we have like black and white portraits. Mm-hmm. And I think people are a little bit surprised by that, but it's also like a 180 in the way of like how do we respond to an individual in a certain space as opposed to responding to being an individual in a space.
Right.
And I think I was interested by the curiosity that people had and the hesitancy to ask questions.
Oh, sure. Do you want to talk a little bit about at your show or at the closing, I believe it was, the power went out, right?
Yeah.
And people had to go around with their cell phones. And
oh my God, that it was gut-wrenching in a way. And I didn't really know, so because we had the closing was from like 6 to 9 and Phil was going to read at 8:15. I think we're at like 7 o'clock, the power went out. And I run around and like Galen was there. I was like, Galen, the power's out. And he comes in and called Ameren. Apparently there are like 33 units out on the block and they're like, it's dispatched. It may or may not come on. So we're like, all right, Phil's reading. We'll just move into Gondo. And this is during Adelaide's talk, which was amazing to see that space filled, you know, the last night of Fort Gondo and Adelaide's giving this great talk. And then, like, so we kind of figured out we would change over to let Phil give a talk in Fort Gondo. But then, so I kind of made an announcement, like, the lights are off if you want to go in. And then 20 or 30 people came in with their cell phones. And, like, it actually, I was like, wow, this is a really great moment. Like, there's art in here happening of people having this really, because the work itself within that Beverly show, within, you know, Wig Heavier Than a Boot, is really intimate. And it's really introspective. And it's really personal. And having somebody like one-on-one staring at each photograph with like this cell phone flashlight was like kind of an amazing, beautiful experience.
Yeah.
I was like, wow. Like
it just, I did that and it felt so much more intentional than art interaction often is. It wasn't passive at all. You had to go in, you had to get your phone out.
Yeah. I mean, I think people thought about it. And I think people like, there was a really sense of beauty and intimacy. And like, I think a lot of people were like, became really introspective in the way that we had really wanted to pose that project.
Yeah.
So that was a really beautiful moment to be a part of, you know, again, like any art show, like you, as much as you prepare yourself or prepare the work or prepare the space or prepare whatever, something's always going to go wrong. Like it just like it, the larger you go up the institutional rung, like there's more people to make sure that those preparations are like secured and firm, but like, you can't control the power. Mm-hmm. And the way that people responded was just like, it was a gift. And the lights came back on and Phil gave a great reading and the space was full and people really responded to it. And it was really amazing to see his friends interact with him before the reading and people kind of waving and saying hello and congratulations and thank you.
Right. All right. So what's your end game then?
Oh, my end game.
Your end game.
immediate. I mean, I think there's with the Beverly Show, with Wig Heavier Than the Boot, Phil and I are in kind of talks of trying to figure out how to publish the work with the photographs and with the poems. There is a strong desire to make sure that the work travels to other exhibition spots across the nation,
yeah.
And maybe the globe, hopefully. So there's a publishing exhibition thing. I have my other project, photographing the Kerrville Folk Music Festival. It can be this way always. I have one more shoot left after 10 years of photographing down there. And that's also pretty much a book project. But like end game, like long run, you know, continue to ask questions that lead to questions. Mm-hmm. I think I have a practice that I've been married to long-term projects. I'm really interested in getting into like a couple of short-term projects. I'm interested in bringing back color to my studio practice.
Okay.
But also seeing what, like, how St. Louis grows, how I grow with it, or, you know, if there's a relocation. I'm interested in going to residencies to see what art making is outside of the community that I'm in, to see how that changes a process and a practice. But I think it's, you know, the end game is to keep playing the game. You know, like, you're in it, and you may as well continue to be in it. I don't want to stop. I guess I'm kind of married to this career.
Yeah.
And I don't want to quit.
Good, don't. All right, well, that's it for this first episode of Five Questions. And thanks to Dave Johnson, our brave test pilot.
Wonderful to be here. Thank you to Critical Mass.
All right. Five Questions is brought to you by Critical Mass for the Visual Arts, which is a nonprofit, self-formed visual arts collaborative dedicated to promoting, enhancing, and initiating contemporary visual art in the St. Louis region. And you can get this Five Questions wherever you get your podcasts ordinarily, or you can find it at criticalmassart.org/5questions, F-I-V-E. You can follow us on Twitter at Critical Mass STL, and you can find us on Facebook as well. David Johnson's webpage is davidjohnsonstudio.com. So check him out there and stay tuned for our next episode.